The text for today's message is James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. And while you're looking that up in your Bible, I'm going to read a story from another pastor about a situation he encountered. One of the saddest phone calls I ever received came from an elder at another church. He barely knew me but was searching for help. His church was without a pastor at the time. The board of elders had interviewed a man and had voted to recommend calling this candidate. Only one elder had dissented, and he had asked his fellow elders to postpone action for 1 week in order to have further consideration in prayer. The elders had agreed to this reasonable request. However, now it appeared that the one dissenting elder had used the week to begin a campaign of criticisms against a pastoral candidate within the congregation. The church became deeply torn with fears and passionate opinions. And by the time the issue came before the larger meeting of the church members, there was such rage and shouting that the elder who was phoning me and who had moderated the meeting said to me painfully, "I found myself wondering, are these Christian people? Are these believers?" He was agonizing over his divided church and asking for counsel. As we look again at James's letter, it is not unlikely that he was dealing with similar situations in the church that he wrote to. You may recall that he has address the issues of double-mindedness, the need for humility, anger, favoritism, and most recently we looked at sins of the tongue, just to name a few. Now, it may not seem apparent at first, but all of these concerns actually have a common denominator. They all are related to a larger subject of wisdom. In the passage we're going to look at today, James contrasts two kinds of wisdom. And in these verses, he is encouraging us to make the daily decision to submit to and live according to true wisdom that finds its source in God. So let's look and see what James has to say here in Chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. James writes, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness." He begins this section by introducing us to the nature of true wisdom. And James grabs his audience's attention by asking them a question, and then he immediately answers that question by giving them a description of what true wisdom looks like. Apparently, there were some who were regarded as, or who were touting the claim to be wise. Conceivably, this could be directed toward those who were or wanted to be teachers among them. What we saw at the beginning of this chapter. But regardless of who it is that James is specifically addressing here, the heart of the matter is he's concerned about these loved ones who were possibly being attracted to a wrong concept of wisdom. And so he gives them a brief two-part description of what a truly truly wise person looks like. And the first thing he points out is that a truly wise person demonstrates good behavior. We've been saying this throughout this series, but it bears repeating, and that is, wisdom is not measured by degrees, that is, knowledge, but by deeds. It's not a matter of acquiring truth in lectures, but of applying the truth to life. That's true wisdom. J.A. Macher points out, the Bible nowhere places much value on knowledge that remains merely cerebral or creedal. Nothing is known until it also reshapes the life. Get that? Knowledge is only truly meaningful to the degree that it impacts our lives. Anything less than this is merely the accumulation and cataloging of information. That's what libraries are for. Second thing James points out is that a truly wise person demonstrates humility. That is to say, that a truly wise person's good behavior is not an disingenuous charade to be seen and to be admired by others. And we've seen that in the likes of the Pharisees. They like to do those things to be seen. But rather, a truly wise person's life reflects the source of their wisdom, which we're going to be considering in just a moment. So any boastfulness and or any parading would indicate that one is not truly wise, because the wisdom that James is advocating is governed by humility. So a person who is truly wise will have good behavior and demonstrate humility. So now, moving on from this description of wisdom, James sets out to contrast two types of wisdom that we can choose to adopt and live according to. In verses 14 through 16, he places before us the first choice of wisdom out there, and that would be worldly wisdom. This worldly wisdom is described for us as possessing four negative attributes. And the first is bitter envy. Worldly wisdom is characterized, first of all, by bitter envy. And I think this term is fairly self-explanatory, so I'm just going to tell you a story that graphically conveys this idea. There's a story of two men who lived in a certain city, and one was envious and the other was covetous. You can see how well this is going to work out. The ruler of the city sent for them one day and said that he was going to grant a wish to one of them with this proviso, that is, the one who chose first would get exactly what he asked for, but the other man would receive exactly twice as much as the person had asked for himself. Well, the envious man was ordered to choose first, but found himself immediately in a quandary. You see, he wanted to choose something great for himself, but he realized at the same time, if I do this, this other person's going to get twice the good that I'm going to get. And so he thought for a while, and then he made his decision. He asked that one of his eyes be put out. See, bitter envy always leaves destruction in its wake. Second negative attribute is self-ambition. And the use of this word in the New Testament is closely associated with antisocial attitudes destructive of the community. That is, it is wanting my way at any cost, and it is usually very costly. Selfish ambition. third and fourth negative attributes of worldly wisdom flow naturally from this bitter envy and selfish ambition, and they are boasting and denying the truth. Something that we see in the world around us all the time. Perhaps you've made this observation like I have, and that is oftentimes the prophets of worldly wisdom will use loud boasting and distortions of the truth in order to justify or to cover up for their attitudes and actions. That's how it looks out there in the world. And then verse 15, James reveals the source of this worldly wisdom. And he begins by telling us where it does not come from. He says it does not come down from above. That is, it does not come from God. Now, just that simple statement alone should alert us to the fact that this kind of wisdom cannot possibly be beneficial. It is something that we should reject categorically. Kent Hughes notes that what James reveals next is an ascending order of negative strength here. In other words, each of the following descriptions of the source of worldly wisdom is intended to bring us to that ultimate source of wisdom. So the first source that James identifies is that it is earthly. And that is to say that its standards and source are earthly. It is measures its success in worldly terms, and its aims are worldly aims. It refers to that which is focused upon and connected to this world system and nothing else. Secondly, we're told that worldly wisdom finds its origin in that which is unspiritual. And this quality of being unspiritual describes wisdom that comes from the mind of depraved and fallen humanity and is hopelessly flawed. In other words, it is wisdom that comes from the best of our being, but it is unaided by God. Unspiritual. And then finally, James states that worldly wisdom finds its source in that which is demonic. George Stulak writes, "To leave no doubt about the evil source of envy and ambition, James says they are literally demonic, of the devil. So his investigation of false wisdom uncovers the same source as his investigation of the uncontrolled tongue that we looked at earlier. And that is, both of them find their source in hell, in the devil. So we see the effects then of worldly wisdom in verse 16. And James lists two specific effects. The first is disorder. And William Barclay notes in his commentary, "There is a kind of a person who is undoubtedly clever with an acute brain and skillful tongue. But his effect, nevertheless, in any committee, in any church, in any group, is to cause trouble and to disturb personal relationships." So worldly wisdom leads to disorder. And the second effect is described as every evil practice. And James is simply making the point, if we are to follow worldly wisdom and allow this envy, the self-ambition, the boasting, and lying to rule in our relationships, then we can expect that the ultimate outcome will be disorder along with every imaginable type of evil practice. There can be no good that ultimately comes from worldly wisdom. Now maybe you're feeling like me at this point and you want James to get on to some uplifting instructions here. I'm ready. Are you ready? Yeah. All right. Well, thankfully, in verses 17 and 18, James places before us then the second kind of wisdom that we can adopt and live according to, which would be true wisdom, wisdom from above. So, in contrasting true wisdom against worldly wisdom, James begins by telling us about the source, which he describes as being from above or from God. And you'll notice he doesn't draw out some lengthy description of the source of true wisdom. It's from God. Rather, what he wants to do in this section is help us to recognize the contrast that he's making here. And that is a contrast between the different origins of these two wisdoms and between the different actions that follow in train. So look closely here at what it is, the difference in origins and then the results that come. So James quickly moves to give us seven virtuous qualities to describe true wisdom, which he says, first of all, is pure. It is pure, and referring to pure as first, he is indicating its primacy among all of the virtues. And the root of this word is the same as the root word for holy. Our word is translated holy. It comes from the same thing. And there are a number of ways that we can understand the meaning then of pure. But among other things, it means that the person is holy and sincerely committed to following God's moral directives. That there are no crooked or unjust motives behind their holiness. So it's all pure. So the next characteristic is peace-loving. And this word here carries the idea of living in peace with others and promoting peace among all. And it points out the fact that true wisdom then produces right relationships here. Relationships of peace. Third virtue of true wisdom is that it is considerate, or that it is gentle. Considerate, gentle. Never been a very popular notion at any point in history, has it? Those are the people that get run over. Well, Grant Osborne notes that this is a quality that refers to a spirit that refuses to demand its own rights, but lives for others. And so it connotes an empathetic, forbearing spirit that accepts others as they are and is willing to forgive. Considerate. Next characteristic is submissive. And again, I just know I'm going to see billboards that say, be submissive. No time soon, right? Not popular. But I want to be clear here. This term does not indicate a person who is without convictions or one who is easily swayed. That's not what we're talking about here on submissive. Rather, it conjures up the image of a sober, thinking, and intuitive person who recognizes the truth when it is heard and willingly receives that instruction, submitting to the truth. So it speaks of one who is teachable, not one who is obstinate or stubborn. That's what we mean by submissive here. True wisdom is further described as being full of mercy and good fruit. And William Barclay states in his commentary that full of mercy means mercy for the one who is in trouble, even if the trouble is their own fault. Goes on further to say, Christian pity is a reflection of God's pity, and that went out to mankind, not only when they were suffering unjustly, but when they were suffering through their own fault. Full of mercy and good fruit. And with this further description, James also means mercy that then issues in good fruits, that is, issues in practical help. See, Christian pity is not merely an emotion, it is an action. And we can never say that we have truly pitied anyone until we have helped them. Sixth quality of true wisdom listed by James is that it is impartial. Now, this is the only time that this word is used in the New Testament. And it is variously translated as non-judgmental, unwavering, or showing no favoritism. Those are some of the ideas behind this word, impartial. James employs this word to communicate the idea that true wisdom is without double-mindedness. It possesses a singularity of purpose in its trust in God. That's what we're talking about. Impartial, in line with God's mind here. And finally, final quality of true wisdom is that it is sincere. And this word has the literal sense of not playing a part. Not playing a part. The person characterized by wisdom from heaven will be stable, trustworthy, transparent. The kind of person consistently displaying the virtues of wisdom and on whom one can rely for advice and counsel. I want to know that kind of person and that kind of wisdom. And then James closes the section by describing the effects of living according to true wisdom. And he states it this way: peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. That's what you can expect when you follow true wisdom. Focus in this verse then is upon establishing the right conditions so that the fruit of righteousness can grow. Friends, if we desire to see the fruit of righteousness being harvested among us, it is imperative that we are cultivating the soil among us so that the seeds of righteousness can take root and grow. Some of you are more acquainted with the soil than others here. So you know the truth of what I just said. If we want to have an abundant harvest, we have to prepare the soil for that. If we want to see a harvest of righteousness, we need to prepare the soil among us so that the seeds of righteousness that are sown will take root and grow. J.A. Macher observes, "How very important Christian fellowship is. A harmonious fellowship of believers is the soil out of which grows the whole life that is pleasing to God." Harmony among us. As I've gotten older, I've come to a number of conclusions about life, and one of them is that there is nothing more important in this life than right relationships. There is nothing more important in this life than to be living in right relationships. When God made us, he made us in his image. The triune God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, is a perfect communion, perfect relationship, perfect harmony. And he made us to be like himself in our relationships with one another. We are social creatures. We are made for God and for one another. And so, in light of all this, please set as one of your highest priorities to have right relationships with everyone. As John writes in his letter, it is impossible to claim to be in a right relationship with God while being at enmity with others at the same time. And so, by the grace of God given to me, I implore each of you, as far as it depends on you, to prioritize and be in right relationships with everyone. So James opened this section with a question, and I'm going to close with a similar one. So here's the question. Who wants to be truly wise and understanding? Who wants that? I see a few hands. Good. As I stated at the beginning of this message, you gain true wisdom by making the deliberate and daily decision to submit to and live according to true wisdom that is from above and finds its source in God. And James has already told us that this wisdom is available to all who will ask. He said back in chapter 1, verse 5, If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. So we need to ask. And choosing to live according to true wisdom not only reaps personal benefit, but it ultimately leads to unity. It will lead to unity in our church, and it will give us credibility and access to reaching our community with the gospel. So choose true wisdom.